We can't talk about recreation in Utah without talking about skiing.
Well, if you want to be a skier, let me tell you what to do. You gotta have time, like a month or two, and plenty of money, and just a little bit more. And I don't mean hundreds, I mean figures of four, and a savings account. Rob the piggy bank.
I tend to forget about snow when I'm thinking about rivers and running water, but snow is arguably the most important form of water we have in Utah. It's the foundation for our watersheds. The marketing group Ski Utah released its end-of-season report this month. The season is measured in ski days, calculated by lift ticket sales and use, and the number was down from the average by 5%, which wasn't bad considering snowfall for the state's 14 ski resorts was 41% of average. The reason it wasn't a whole lot worse, according to Ski Utah spokesperson Paul Marshall, is because the resorts are able to make enough snow with machines to make up the difference.
In the year when we had a very low, unfortunate snowfall, and that's due to Mother Nature, investment in effective, energy-efficient snowmaking paid dividends into keeping skier visits and keeping our $1.3 billion winter industry economy alive.
And you need a mountain, preferably high, with a lodge and a pool that's right nearby, trails and runs and a good long tow, and something else? Oh yeah, snow. Plenty of it, brother. About 6 foot of base, little fresh powder every day. That's what they advertise.
So when you got There's no doubt that the state of Utah values the ski industry and the billion-plus dollars the greatest snow on Earth brings. But tourists aren't really stakeholders in what we do with our mountains, and the money they bring is only part of the equation. That extra man-made snow that was needed to save the industry during this year's warm winter came at a cost. Snow falls from the sky, but it doesn't come out of nowhere. How can we be responsible stewards of the watershed and the landscape? What's the most environmentally friendly way of getting thousands of skiers to the slopes and back on any given powder day? How can we keep our reputation as life elevated and our thriving outdoor recreation economy without loving our backyard to death? These are big questions. This is a job for Mountain Accord. Mountain Accord is a group of over 20 private, nonprofit, and government organizations that sit at one big table trying to strike a balance between the environment, recreation, transportation, and the economy of the central Wasatch Mountains. They've been meeting for a while, and they're finally out with a proposed blueprint, a blueprint for the future, in light of a growing population, a changing climate, evolving technology, shifting values, and dwindling resources. Carl Fisher has one of the seats at the Mountain Accord table. He's the head of Save Our Canyons, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting the wildness of the Wasatch Mountains.
The Mountain Accord was born out of conflict, really, as an effort to try and resolve conflict. Since about mid-90s, Save Our Canyons had been trying to expand upon the wilderness areas in the central Wasatch Mountain to try and protect some of the ecosystems, the wildlife habitat, and of course, our watershed.
What Carl Fisher would like to see most come out of Mountain Accord is permanent protection for the land. The current blueprint for the future includes federal protection at a couple of different levels. Fisher would be happy with any of them, he says, but the crown jewel would be protection under the Federal Wilderness Act.
It's one of the only ways we have to really permanently protect a landscape. The Wilderness Act is really iconic conservation legislation.
While any federal protection is better than no federal protection, Save Our Canyons favors something that allows for the kinds of recreation that tread lightly on the landscape and that won't threaten water quality.
I think recreation is important to our economy, to our quality of life. But there are those out there who think that recreation should be the driving factor for land management. I believe more that conservation should be the driving factor and that we make allowances for recreation, but that not be the driver.
One of the reasons it's so important to protect the central Wasatch Mountains is because 350,000 people rely on that snow for their drinking water. Laura Briefer also has a seat at the Mountain Accord table. She's the water resource manager for Salt Lake City Public Utilities. Knowing what she knows about where the city's drinking water comes from should make you think twice about what happens in the mountains.
What'll we do when the snow's all gone? What'll we do when the grass turns green? What'll we do when the toes shut down? and our favorite run is a muddy ravine. What'll we do when it doesn't storm?
Salt Lake City's watershed is really in your face. Anytime you gaze out at the peaks of the Central Wasatch, you're essentially looking at the water that will someday be coming out of your tap, right?
Right. So Salt Lake City gets the majority of its culinary water or drinking water from the Central Wasatch Mountains. And that includes the streams from City Creek, Parley's Canyon, Big Cottonwood Canyon, Little Cottonwood Canyon. And then we also have some storage rights along the Provo River system in the Deer Creek and Jordanelle system. Really, we could say that on average, Salt Lake City and the citizens that rely on the drinking water that Salt Lake City provides gets about 90% of its water supply from surface water emanating from the Central Wasatch.
Those canyons that you mentioned are probably less known as sources for culinary water than they are for home to some pretty famous ski resorts.
That's right. So our municipal, we refer to our watersheds where we receive our drinking water as our municipal watersheds. And that's because there are some regulatory requirements related to our municipal watersheds. Our two most important municipal watersheds, Big and Little Cottonwood Canyons, are home to four world-class ski resorts, Alta, Brighton, Snowbird, and Solitude. And they also host a growing population of dispersed recreation users, so people that like to backcountry ski outside of resort boundaries, people that like to rock climb and hike and mountain bike. In fact, the area of the Central Wasatch is in the top five most heavily used national forests for recreation in the country and receives just about as much visitation as Yellowstone National Park, and it's pretty much all recreation.
And what impact do those recreational activities have on the watershed?
Well, you know, our concern is loving the environment to death. So, you know, a healthy, functioning watershed is important for good water quality and for a reliable supply. And as we recreate in these watersheds, we could love the watersheds to death. We could provide a risk to the healthy functioning of those watersheds if it's not managed correctly. So, you know, a lot of the way to mitigate a lot of the recreational use is to do things like manage impacts, whether those are trail impacts, whether we need to put restrooms in place or sanitary facilities in place so that we don't, you know, have human waste impacting our streams. The side effect, too, of a lot of commercial recreation is this pressure to develop more within the watershed, so more buildings and more homes and those types of things. So we have a lot of associated pressure from that, which in turn impacts that functioning of our municipal watersheds.
How is Salt Lake City Public Utilities planning for the future? I mean, there are plans in other parts of the state to develop new sources of water, like pipelines on the Bear River or the Lake Powell pipeline. But what are the options for Salt Lake City? I mean, is the water that's coming out of the local mountains the only source of water that the city has or will ever have in the future?
It's sort of an interesting question because what we do as a water supply entity, as a municipal water supplier, you know, we plan for 100 years of, you know, population growth and for increased water needs. So when we do these plans, we do identify additional sources. But those sources that we identify are just incrementally a little bit more. And really the base and the most important part of our drinking water system is the water that comes off the Wasatch Mountains. If we lose that, we really don't have other options. It would be very difficult to serve our community, if not impossible. The other great thing about the Central Wasatch in terms of reliability of the water supply is the fact that Salt Lake City holds the majority of the water rights to those systems. So we don't have the same kind of conflict over the right to use water that other systems might, where it's in a much more shared environment. amongst different entities. And so that's another reason why this is so important to us. It was a first source of water for Salt Lake City. And as the city has grown, we've expanded those resources. It is still the basis of the economy and public health of our community.
There's a proposed blueprint out right now from the Mountain Accord. It just went through a public comment period, and I know that it can still change at this point. But with what's being proposed right now, do you think that it includes adequate protection for the watershed?
I think it does. And the reason why it addresses watershed protection is that it allows for protection of thousands of acres of land, either in a federal designation that is an enhanced protective designation on federal lands that exist in our watersheds, and it also seeks to protect some private land in holdings from development. The other thing that the Mountain Accord blueprint does is it, and it's a little ambiguous right now, but one of the goals is to provide resources to collaboratively manage our watersheds in terms of land use and recreational impacts. And so from that standpoint, I think that the blueprint really is a great opportunity for us to have certainty with respect to the long-term protection of those watersheds. There are ongoing negotiations with respect to the ski resorts, and part of that negotiation has a nexus to water. And for instance, each of the ski resorts would like to increase snowmaking. The way that they do snowmaking at the resorts is through a surplus water contract with Salt Lake City. Since Salt Lake City holds the water rights, you know, we're not allowed to divest of those water rights because those water rights are for the economic prosperity and the public health of our community down in the valley. That said, we recognize that there is a benefit, a quality of life benefit, and an economic benefit to supporting our ski resorts. So we enter into a contract situation with each ski resort that allows them to use some water for snowmaking. And, you know, what they're asking for is increased snowmaking water to ensure their sustainability over time. So we're willing to work with them on that in exchange for certainty that we're not going to have additional ski area expansion into the watersheds, or certainty that we have additional land protection in perpetuity.
Is there surplus water? I guess I don't understand the definition of surplus water. Maybe you could explain that.
Right.
Is there surplus to give?
It's kind of a funny term, but so what you have to do is understand the hydrologic cycle of our watersheds. And so snowmelt happens, and we have a peak in flows from our watersheds, and then over the summer, the flows go down. And so during the winter, when the resorts are making water, that's when we have a low demand period in our system. And so we're able to say, you know, during the month of November, we've entered into a contract where they can use a certain amount of water for snowmaking. They're using it when we don't have high demand for water because people aren't watering outdoors.
I know that Salt Lake City Utilities has been really proactive about planning for climate change. Does the Mountain Accord blueprint address climate change, or does it take it into consideration at all?
Mountain Accord does address climate change. So over the last year, as we were developing information that establishes our baseline conditions in the mountains and our anticipated future trend lines, we used a lot of data collected with respect to climate change vulnerabilities and impacts across the region. We've also looked at it from the perspective of, you know, the root of the problem, greenhouse gas emissions. One of the goals of Mountain Accord is to evaluate, you know, as part of the criteria, do the actions reduce greenhouse gas emissions potentially, or would they increase them, or, you know, how would that affect on the greenhouse gas emissions side as well? As we move forward into the next phase, I would like to see climate change be more rigorously evaluated. So, for instance, if we move forward into an environmental review process under the National Environmental Policy Act. I hope that we have a section in there that looks at climate change in terms of climate change in water or in terms of greenhouse gases or snowpack even.
Mountain Accord is a huge undertaking. It's a huge conversation. There are like 200 people at the table. The public is involved. There are organizations there that don't really get along. Carl Fisher from Save Our Canyon said, you know, that the Mountain Accord was born out of conflict. What's it like to be a part of that? I mean, either like personally or representing Salt Lake City Public Utilities.
That is a great question. It is a very intense process for the reasons you mentioned. I'd like to step back a little bit to talk about what originally brought us to the table. And for Salt Lake City and for, you know, our Department of Public Utilities in particular, what we've seen over the years is this propensity within the Central Wasatch to make piecemeal decisions. So, you know, what we felt is that the status quo of just this increasing pressure and lots of jurisdictions involved in piecemeal decision-making probably wasn't the best for the future of our watersheds. And if there's an opportunity to sit down with all of the interests and negotiate a more certain future for the Wasatch that does the things that we want the Wasatch to do for us in terms of water, in terms of recreation, but primarily the protection of this amazing natural system and resource, we wanted to be there at that table, and we wanted to be a leader at the table. And so to your question with respect to what is it like, I have to say that I have been extremely impressed at the collaboration across interests, how much each of the interests at the table have been willing to dig deeply and talk about what is really driving their wants and needs for the Wasatch. And I think that's brought us even now to a much better place than we were before we started Mountain Accord. It is a hard process. I won't lie. It is on a day-to-day basis, can be very challenging. But I'm really glad that we're doing it.
In this white world that reaches the sky, I found a future for me.
Laura Briefer. She's the Water Resource Manager for Salt Lake City Public Utilities and a very busy participant of the Mountain Accord process. She'll be heavily involved in phase two of the process, which is the environmental review period. A bunch of federal agencies will be looking at the blueprint, which includes increased federal protection of public land, which Carl Fisher is asking for. That could be under the Wilderness Act, or parts of the Central Wasatch could become a national monument or a national recreation area. The blueprint calls for over 2,000 acres of public land surrounding the ski resorts. And in return, the resorts would get public transportation, so that could be a rail line, it might be a rapid bus system, they're not really sure yet. And they'll also get permission to develop around those new bus or train stops, and they'll get some additional water for snowmaking from, presumably, Salt Lake Public Utilities. And it will be a couple of years before the environmental review period is over and any of these plans go into effect.
For his skis are the thing that give him his wing and make him an eagle on high.
The Source comes from the studios of Utah Public Radio with major support from iUtah. Ryan Cunningham produces a lot of the show. He makes everyone sound smart and articulate and nips my long-windedness in the bud. Megan Semper wrote and played our theme music. Catch her live with her band Hoodoo on June 20th at the Mendon Mountain Music Festival in the little town of Mendon in Cache Valley, Utah. Special thanks to Source reporter Ross Chambliss and all of our guests. You can listen to previous episodes of The Source at upr.org while you wait for the next month's show to come out. Follow Utah Public Radio on Facebook and Twitter. The hashtag for the show is UPR Source. I'm Jennifer Pemberton. Thank you for listening.